This is the moment you've all been waiting for. It's time for a new episode of Kings of the Podcast. Buckle up. Here we go.
Episode 189, live from Edmonton. Dennis Bernstein, how are you doing this evening?
I'm in your favorite city, one of your favorite Canadian cities, John. I'm doing better than the Kings are right now, but I'm glad to be with you, joining you from lovely Alberta, where, John, it's actually warmer in Edmonton than it is in Los Angeles right now.
Well, better you than me, my friend. That's all I can say. So with that, we can move on. It all depends on how you look at things with the LA Kings, Dennis, and I'm going to try to get your perspective on perhaps the glass being half full instead of half empty as we move along here. But let's tee up a couple things here. First of all, we intended this to be a, or we are intending for this to be a short podcast. We'll let everybody know in advance. You and I tend to get into some topics at times that can make it run long. So we'll see if we can meet our objective tonight. The Kings failed at their objective on Monday. We'll see if perhaps we can meet our objective here. We're recording this on Tuesday evening. The playoffs are rolling along. The Rangers did beat the Capitals tonight 4-3. They took a 2-0 lead in that series. And just moments ago, Dennis, the Panthers won in overtime. So they are now up on that in that series 2-0. And the Jets have a 1-0 lead at the time that we pressed record. We'll have to see if that game moves along, but I think it's only gone through one period, so it probably won't be over. Damn, it better not be over, Dennis, by the time we're done recording this. But and the Predators have an early lead, so this will all be outdated information by the time the podcast goes live. Of course, Edmonton has a 1-0 lead. Before we get too deep into the NHL playoffs, though, I will, for our listeners, mention, Dennis, that the AHL Calder Cup playoffs are going to begin on Wednesday. So it's going to be a double duty night while the Kings are playing game two in Edmonton. The Ontario Reign are kicking off a best of three series in Ontario. So that'll kind of be happening at around the same time. Interestingly, the Reign lost their last game. Right. It came down to game 72 of the AHL regular season to determine who they were going to play. If they won, they were going to play one team. And if they lost, they were going to play another
team.
Sounds
familiar, John.
I know.
Sounds familiar.
But here's the really cool thing, Dennis, is they end up playing Bakersfield, which is the baby version of the Oilers.
So,
yeah, you have black and silver going against blue and orange on both sides, the NHL and the AHL side. By the way, Broberg earlier today was sent down. I guess he's going to be with the Condors. So we'll have to keep an eye on what happens there. But the point is, the Reign begin a best of three series, and there was a lot of confusion regarding the schedule because everybody, myself included, thought that if you were the higher seeded team, you were going to get three games at home for the first round of the playoffs, which is a best of three series. It ends up that's not the case. Only the number two seed, because number one gets a bye, which is weird enough as it is, but the number two seed received all three games at home. 3 and 4, which were the other two quote unquote higher seeds.
Right.
They only received three games at home if the team that they were playing was more than 200 miles away. So, for example, if the Reign had won, I know you love these details. If the Reign had won game 72 and they were playing Calgary, all three games would have been in Ontario because clearly Calgary is more than 200 miles away. However, Bakersfield is unfortunately only 149 miles away. It's under 200 miles.
Those damn 51 miles, John.
Yes, exactly. Kern County. For once in my life, I wish that the Reign were playing like Hartford or Hanford or Visalia or somewhere in the Central Valley. Anyway, so instead of being three games at home at Toyota Arena, it's going to be a 1-1-1. So they're going to play Wednesday, sure, Saturday, Sunday, games 1, 2, and 3. First team to win two games moves on to the second round. That's what's happening there. And hey, just like the LA Kings, the Ontario Reign are fully healthy pretty much. So you have Brent Clark anchoring the defense, and he did finish just one assist basically shy of taking over the rookie points or whatever it was. I tweeted it out. I forgot exactly what it was, but he was close. Sammy Fagamo was one goal away from the AHL scoring lead, but he sat out the final game. A curious move. Sat out the final game of the regular season, but they're fully healthy. Thomas is there. Turcotte is there. They're going to be there for game one. I guess you could say, Dennis, what happens with the Kings would ultimately determine if they're there for the whole first round, because theoretically, Thomas or Turcotte or Fagamo, less likely Fagamo, but could be recalled to the Kings if Coach Jim Hiller wanted to make a coaching change. We don't have to spend a lot more time on the Ontario Reign other than to say they're playing a best of three series with the Bakersfield Condors beginning on Wednesday. So that'll be something to watch, because Marco Sturm has a really deep team, and they've arguably been the AHL's best team in 2024. They had winning streaks, I believe, of 8 games and also of 7 games. Just really have been on a roll. They were getting good goaltending as well. We'll have to see how Eric Portillo does. He's a rookie, and Aaron Dell is now up with the Kings. So it's all on Portillo at this point, rookie goaltender. So anyway, moving on to the LA Kings. Dennis, I want to ask your perspective on this, because it's easy, I think, to say the Kings were outclassed. They were down 4-0. It was a steamroller that, you know, ran over. It was a train, freight train that ran over them. You know, any of those other sort of headlines. How about this one? The Kings scored 4 goals plus the disallowed goal. If you take away the Hyman goal that was kicked in, you really could say it was 5-5, and you wouldn't have had to pull the goalie at the end. Was the game, if you want to say things, you know, think positively, was the game closer than it may have appeared?
No.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either.
The last two goals were garbage goals, right?
Yeah.
Like the last two goals were garbage goals, and they were lucky goals, right? I mean, stick breaks. CeCe tries to pass the puck with his hand, and it goes right to Deneau, who goes to feeds it to Moore, and the Dubois went off of your favorite guy, Nurse's skate. Here's the thing, John. They never set up their 1-3-1 all game. Like, they never did. Like, they couldn't deploy it. I don't know why. Time and space in the neutral zone. It was tough. And let's be real. Connor, Mikey had a bad night. Mikey Innes had a tough night defending Connor. It's not the first time it'll happen. Not the last time. Won't be the last guy to get victimized by Connor McDavid. They had a shot early in the third. Right? 4-2, starting the third. Needed to kill that penalty. And a couple of those penalties, the last two penalties on Moore and Dubois, you can't take those penalties against that team. It just gave them momentum, gave them opportunity. So, yeah, it was – there was a chance, right? If they killed off the penalty and got a goal, make it 4-3 in the third, they would have had a shot. But they were outclassed. It looked like – it just looked like too many – you know, and they said the same thing. Drew, Adrian Kempe, and Hiller said the same thing. Like, penalty kill wasn't good, and just the rush chances. It was you can't give the Edmonton Oilers rush chances. If they beat you by going to the net and getting traffic around the net, that's one thing. You can't give this team rush chances. The 1-3-1 wasn't effective, but you know, I tweeted last night. It's not a one-game series. If it was a one-game series, it would be a disaster. John, they got to play tomorrow night like it's game 7. They really do. Because if you lose game 2, and I get it, it's, you know, the cliches are abound now. It's not a home. It's not a series till a home team loses. All this other crap. Like, and it's also, John, degrees, right? Like, if they were to lose tomorrow night, but lose a game in 4-3 where it was closer, it just – you can't have Connor McDavid get 5 assists. You can't have Zach Hyman tapping pucks. And even Drew said – Drew was very transparent last night. And I asked him the question, and people, I'm sure, saw it on the media availability. Was he surprised at the amount of mistakes this team made? And he goes, yeah, it was so out of character. And I think one of the worst defensive performances of the season. And when it's against that team – That's the issue. And the other issue, John, if you look at the 4 regular season games, so people that think it was a deep series or actually picked the Kings to win, they're regressing against this team. And that's my concern about this team, is that their worst performance against Edmonton came in the 5th game they played against them. There's no mysteries. Total familiarity. We talked about one of the positives was the team was healthy for the first time in 82 games, and it simply wasn't good enough. So it's, you know, I try to be positive and try to spin things a little bit positively, but everybody's going to have to play like it's game seven. They're going to need a lot. And it's not like, okay, you can't say player X had a good game or player Y had a bad game. Nobody had a good game. Nobody could go last night and look in the mirror and say,
collectively, yeah, they were not as good as they needed to be, especially in the first period.
Yeah. Yeah. And the first 10 minutes were fine. It was even. The first goal was, you know, is what it is. The second goal, I don't know what. Gavrikov had a tough night. He was running around the ice. I don't know what he was doing on second goal. But, yeah, just the system that Jim Hill deployed. And McClellan, too, the 1-3-1 just wasn't there last night. It has to be there tomorrow night. They have to stop them in the neutral zone. They can't give them time and space and opportunity. If they do it again, you're going to see the same result tomorrow night.
You're going to need some more physicality as well. And, I understand in certain markets or certain sides of the league, old-time hockey is not there. It certainly still exists, you know, more in the Eastern Conference. It always has. The West has been more of a wide-open conference. Mm-hmm. But there needs to be greater physicality, Dennis. There have to be guys that are willing to run through a wall for their team. And I didn't see enough of that in game one. I thought that the Kings came out extremely nervous and jittery in the first 10 minutes. I didn't think that they were playing with the same confidence that they have when they're going to find success. It made me as the viewer nervous watching for them, if that makes any sort of sense. They were making me uncomfortable. I'm with you that the first goal, you would have hoped that for LA's sake to maybe calm the nerves, they would have been able to get that first goal. They didn't. You kind of try to shake it off and go, okay. But then from there, the wheels started to fall off. I'm not as concerned about the fact that McDavid had 5 assists. That's an anomaly. There hasn't been a player in the NHL that's had 5 assists in a playoff game since 1998. That was a while ago, Dennis, even though, unfortunately, it was Jeff Courtnall against the LA Kings, by the way, in the series that we've talked about on this program before, which is when the Blues did end up sweeping the LA Kings. It was an embarrassing series, and Jeff Courtnall became enemy number one, taking out Jamie Storr and, you know, Sean O'Donnell, in an interview on Mayor's Manor, said, you know, he still has nightmares about that particular series. So hopefully it's not a repeat of that series. But you did say something earlier that if we're going to try to keep things positive, I would like Kings fans to hold on to. And that is that game one does not always tell the story of the series, because let's just go back to the last 2 years. The Kings won game one both of the last 2 years. Edmonton could have at that point said, well, the series is over. We lost game one. Instead, they regrouped. They flipped the script. They were able to even the series and then go from there. That's what the Kings need to do. You mentioned cliches. It is a cliche, but you only have to worry about the next game. Don't worry about game three. Don't worry about game five. Nope. Don't worry about which team has home ice and all that sort of nonsense. You just have to worry about the game that's in front of you. And to extend the cliches even further, worry about the period that's in front of you. Win the first period. And then go from there, and then win the second period, and so on. I'm intrigued by the goaltending matchup, Dennis, because we talked about this a few weeks ago on the podcast, and would we see both goaltenders, and what would it take to move off of Cam Talbot? My prevailing thought, I think this is what I said, you'd have to go back and roll the tape, but I said at the time, I thought Talbot would have to lose 2 games before you saw Riddick. But I'm going to tell you right now, Dennis, if you were to ask me, I would put Riddick in the net for game 2.
Well, here's what Hiller said after the game. The forwards didn't help the defense. The defense didn't help the goaltender. So maybe 2 of the goals, John, stoppable, like the Henrique goal, even though he was wide open, was short side. I think he would go back to Talbot for 2. And I agree with your first premise about losing 2 in a row. You lose 2 in a row, Rittich comes in. And it goes back to the same thing, John. Like, these are system goaltenders, like system quarterbacks in football. Like, the team is not built for Cam Talbot to face 45 shots or David Rittich. And they had 45 shots last night. So if you're going to run that again and run that type of game and have those amount of shots, it doesn't matter if it's Rittich or Talbot, right? So if they can control it better and keep it to maybe 25 to 30 shots, that's how this team wins. So I don't think it was put on Cam Talbot, but I'll tell you one thing about Cam Talbot. And I tweeted it today. All that chanting last night, like, first of all, I was surprised it was that loud. And that vociferous.
That building was rocking, Dennis.
The building was rocking, and Cam stood up there and said, I expected it because I saw other goalies get subject to that. So I expected it. But let me tell you about Edmonton, he said. He said, this place has a special place in my heart, unlike John Hovind. Well, actually, he didn't say that. And he said,
that would have been fantastic if he did, though. Let me just tell you.
I've had my greatest success here. My kids were born here. It's a special place to me. So that's a pro, man. That's a guy I want to go to war with. That's a guy I would put back in the net and give him another shot because the team in front of him, frankly, failed him.
But here's my point, though, DB. Yeah.
Go ahead.
While I do agree, and Jim Hiller could make me look stupid tomorrow by going against what I'm about to say, while I do agree that he's going to go back to Talbot, because that's been his MO, that when Talbot has a bad game, go back to Talbot, give him a chance to redeem himself. And I don't necessarily say that the loss is on Cam Talbot, but here's what I believe. You just need to change something. You need to change the juju. You need to do something, and you don't have a lot of options because you're not putting Kaliev in. If you're going to go Mavari, you're probably going 11-7. Do you really want to go 11-7 in game two? And if you're going 11-7, who are you pulling out? Are you pulling out Grundstrom? Because you're losing the physicality element when you're pulling him out that I was asking for more of, and you're not pulling out Trevor Lewis. So who are you pulling out? I don't know. Right. So I don't think it's 11-7. I just think that sometimes you just need a different feel, right? You just need something different. So you feel like you're doing something different, even though a system goalie versus a system goalie, you're really not changing anything. It's just optics.
And John, to your point, like what's the one constant since Jim Hill has been on the bench? Change. He's not afraid to change. He's not and of course, like, you know, Jim will never tell you who the goalie is for the next game. Like, so that you're not, we didn't get anything from today. So to your point about changing, you got to change something. And is changing the goalie an option? Yeah. And would I think it's a bad decision to go to David Rittich? No, I don't think it would be a bad decision. But again, I can't lay that game on Cam Talbot because 45 shots is just – and
not.
The type of shots is unacceptable.
Yeah,
too many high danger. They had 23 high danger chances. Like, you know, Vasilevsky and Hellebuck aren't going to win a game like that. So, but I get your point about change. Something has to change, and that's one option.
And the one thing he doesn't change, though, Dennis, and I think this has been lost on the narrative of Jim Hiller and his, you know, constant changing. He doesn't change the defense. And I'm not suggesting that he should. I just want to point out constant has been the defense. It's Mikey Anderson and Drew Doughty every game. Yep. It's Gavrikov and Roy every game. Mm-hmm. It's England and Spence every game. So short of calling up Brant Clark, or like I said a moment ago, if you're going to put Mavari in, what are you doing? Because you can't put Mavari in really and pair him with Spence. Again, you're taking England out, who's supposed to give you some physicality. And Dennis, you and I will probably disagree on this. England has to do something physically last night. If the reason he's in the lineup to intimidate and send a message, if there was ever a game, if there was one game out of the 83 games they've played this year where he has to deliver a message, it was last night. And he did. I'm going to tell you, Dennis, Evander Kane did something, you know, when he was in that position in game one last year, the Kings didn't deliver that message. And to me, that was disappointing. I would have wanted to see number five.
That's fair.
On, speak the crap out of somebody, even if it's not Darnell Nurse. You have to do something. And you have to show that other team, hey, we played like crap in the first period, but we're not going to roll over in this series. I don't want Edmonton going to bed last night thinking this is going to be a walk in the park. I want them going to bed knowing that they're ready for war in game two.
And here's the odd thing about it, John. I don't know how they keep score up here in Edmonton, but the Kings recorded on the score sheet. You're talking about physicality? 65 hits last night. I didn't have the puck.
It's been across the league. Have you seen it? Yeah. The hits are through the roof.
I know. It's unbelievable. I'm like, 65? Like, I was there. Like, that's almost as many hats as went on the ice.
Okay, we go.
When Hyman scored. There was 1,161 hats went on the ice, John. Someone counted it. It's the most hats I've ever seen on the ice.
Yeah, whenever I see those hat count numbers, I want to know, who counts the hats? Do they just do they just go, hey, we're going to fill a bag up and a bag has, I'm just making this number up, a bag has 62 hats and they just count the number of bags? Like, is it an average or there's really some dork in the corner going, 1, 2, 3? I need to know this. Whoever's out there is a hat counter, can you please email me or send me
a
direct message?
I'm going to that tomorrow, John. I'm going to go to the Oilers PR and
find out.
Ask, like, how you got to that number.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Is it an approximation or is it, you know, unrelated, by the way, to the current year, Dennis, but to put a cap on Quentin Byfield's performance in game 82, which earned him that bonus money,
Yes.
The Kings overage amount. I know I'm jumping topics, but I don't want to talk about game one too much. It is what it is.
Exactly.
I wish people could have seen the text message I sent you before the show tonight. But overage next year, Dennis, $1.85 million. So right off the top, you take the salary cap for next year, and the Kings will have $1.85 million sliced off the top, and then they'll have some more money sliced off. That's the new sound effects on the podcast.
Yes.
Sliced off the top for the Mike Richards buyout and so on and so forth.
And the Provorov retention.
Yes, the retention money, all this stuff. It's ridiculous. Yeah. I've written about it. It's out there. Yep. This should not be new news. But for anybody new to the program, Cam Talbot was on a 1+1 contract this year. $1 million of his income was hitting the cap this year. And when he played 10 games, he got a $1 million bonus. And because the Kings were already at the salary cap limit, essentially, his bonus has to be paid out of next year's money. And then Quentin Byfield earned multiple bonuses, not just the $425,000 the other night. He earned multiple bonuses for a total of $850,000 that are tied into an entry-level contract. And that money will also come out of the cap next year. That's why I said $1.85 million off the top next year. We'll do a full salary cap review. We'll project out the numbers, everything that we do every summer once the Kings are done playing many, many, many weeks from now in the postseason, Dennis, because I'm standing by it. Kings in six. I still think it's going to happen. We'll have to wait and see. Any comment on that?
No. I'm good.
Okay,
I'm good.
Fine.
You never know, John. It's just one game, but you never know.
I think, look.
A lot of shit got to change, John. If you're going to cut me right on that
It
one.
Does.
Gotta
it change. Does.
Yep.
You know, I mean, at this point, I'll take Kings in seven. Just this was the year. I believe this was the year. I think they had the team on paper. I've liked what Hiller has done. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see some settling on the lines. I'd like to see the pendulum swing back the other way. I'm not opposed to change. But, I mean, Dennis, I mean, I don't know who, never mind who's, I don't even care what the lines are anymore to start the game because I know three shifts. I think it was three shifts into the game last night. He was already mixing things around. I don't even know how you do that. How do you know three shifts into the game it's time to move Quentin Byfield?
He even changed out of warm up, right? Because in warm up, it was Fiala with Lizotte and Lewis, which was odd anyway. And the first time they went out there, it was 80, 55, and 22. So that line in warm up never hit the ice. Never hit. I mean, it might have hit the ice maybe in the third when the game was over, but it was like so. Yeah, I agree. And I know Fiala's a line driver, but with 61 and 46, I'm like, what? I mean, I don't think so. Now, I think 80 and 22 on the same line has been a challenge all year. And some fans said, well, they were great against Chicago in game 82. I'm like, so that's one game against the worst team in the league.
The worst team in the league.
4-3. And you beat them 4-3 because you have to get a power play going the last minute after a delay a game. So it's not really a validation that line really was producing. But, yeah, look, here's the thing. I said on SiriusXM today, Dubois has to more than show up. He's got to be an impact player. This is all the things that we heard for 6 months, John. Wipe the slate clean. He's a difference maker. He's got to do something. He's got to be an impact player going forward because if he's not, all the tough things that have been said about him will come to fruition.
Yeah. Well, it's true for every player, Dennis. You have an opportunity to rewrite the narrative come the postseason, and this is his opportunity to do that. This is his opportunity to change the narrative, and he's going to have to do that. I thought in the first period he was the most physical of the Kings players.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I didn't like the penalty, and you can argue that it was a soft penalty there along the boards. But it's a penalty that you can't take though. Also,
it's not interference. Like the Connor was at the bench; he was going off the ice.
It's McDavid.
Yeah.
You're going to
protect
Montana.
That's what I joked about in the press box. I'm like, so that penalty is with hitting the guy with the name on the back of his jersey that said McDavid. I even tweeted. I said that was hitting McDavid. Oh no, it was interference. It's not interference. If you hit a guy at center ice and when he's not near the puck, that's interference. The guy's going off and he's not in the play. That's not
interference. But you don't need to do it. That's my point, Dennis. You don't need to do it.
I agree.
He was already getting under the skin of the Oilers.
I agree.
When you're already under the skin of somebody, that's the best time to turn a cheek and walk away.
Yep.
And let them get the retaliatory penalties. That's because they would have. It would, but they didn't need to. Because the Kings ended up taking stupid penalties,
Agreed.
As it was, as soft as it was. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's Connor McDavid, and you have to know. So
I agree.
anything else around the NHL in terms of playoffs that is, you know, the playoff games that have already happened that has surprised you? Carolina, yeah. New York, Vancouver, they're losing a goaltender, so they're up a creek.
I think going back to game one, if you beat Connor Hellebuck six times and can't win the game, like, when are you going to win the game?
That's defeating.
That goaltender, everybody said Georgiev was the worst goaltender in the playoffs. He proved it, right? And they might come back, but they're not going deep with that goaltending. And the defense, it's not just the goaltender. I mean, he was bad, but the defense is bad too. So, look, you know, we're going to do the Stanley Cup final for SiriusXM. The last place I want to be, even more so than Edmonton, would be Winnipeg. You know, but they got a shot, John. They got a legit shot. So I'm not surprised about, look, with respect to Vancouver, big blow. Demko out for the series.
That's huge.
Yeah, that's huge for them. You know, the first goal the Smith gave up wasn't really pretty. Now I give Nashville a much better chance of getting out of that round. But that's it. I think they're going to stay in the bracket. Whoever wins, it's not going to happen. And, John, here's the biggest takeaway. I'm there last night. I'm talking to all the guys, all the reporters and stuff like that. And I go, hey, guess who scored the first goal for Vegas 1 minute and 23 seconds into the game? And the people, like, some people knew, but some didn't know. I go, Mark Stone. And people started laughing. I go, of course he did. So it's a much more dangerous team. And, John, what did I say about Dallas? The one weak link was Jake Oettinger. And Jake Oettinger couldn't stop a beach ball early in that game, and they wound up losing it. It opened the door for Vegas. That's an even series now, because the one thing they couldn't have is a mediocre Jake Oettinger, and they got it. And that's even with that terrible goal that Logan Thompson gave up to make it 4-3. Like, Marchment was at the boards 40 feet away, and the puck went past Thompson. So that's not going to be a goaltending series. But now Vegas looks much more dangerous with Stone back in the lineup. But I'm sure we're going to hear the complaints about salary cap and, you know, injuries and LTIR. But
as we should, Dennis, as we should.
Yeah, I know.
It's a little too coincidental. It really is. The league says they're looking at it. It is too coincidental.
Right. No, I'm saying it's not coincidental. I think it's
fact. Yeah. Yeah, of course.
It's real.
You want a good story? How about Rempe, what's his name?
Yeah.
Matt over Rempe in New York. Yeah. The Empire State Building. I don't know if you saw the Empire State Building tweet tonight. Empire State Building tweeted out the Empire State Building. I don't know if any other sixth round draft pick in the history of the NHL has been getting this kind of run this early in his career. You're not talking about a guy who, you know, he's overcome all the odds and he's 10 years into his career and had an established career. This kid's a rookie. And he's already being tabbed with being the Empire State Building, with the beautiful picture of the Empire State Building done up in red, white, and blue. Go check that out on Twitter if you can. But what do you think of him, Dennis?
I think he's very impactful. I'm shocked, to be honest with you, because I think now that, look, they're playing the Capitals. Capitals really shouldn't be in it. They're not truly a playoff team. They played better in game two. But I want to see when they play Carolina, when he goes on the ice. Carolina's a quick team, fast team. Will they take advantage of that? And I want to see how he's deployed on the road. At home, and Lavi's a great coach, he has the advantage of the last shift, so he's going to get an advantageous matchup. Can other teams exploit him, because he's not the fastest player? But look, he's the type of guy in Madison Square Garden that's captured everybody's imagination.
Absolutely.
And that's what happens in the Garden. That's what happens. It's New York City. I'm a New Yorker. I know it. I'm not surprised. He's captured people's imagination.
You're no longer a New Yorker. You're from the Valley now. Okay, you can't claim you're from New York. You've been gone too long.
My accent says I'm still from New York.
Nah, you're a pretty boy now. You're California. Okay, yeah, you're from the Valley. It does. No, okay. I'm not buying it. You've lost.
You see that picture
grit
of me and Daryl Evans last night with my new coat? I mean, that was pretty good.
Yes, I did.
I'm no Daryl Evans, but I'm trying. So, but yeah, it's a great story. I'm not sure. Look, they're not going to win a cup if they do because of Matt Rempe, but it's a really, really great story early in the playoffs.
Okay. I'm going to give you one thing here as we wrap up the program. We move on. I'm so happy to have found some other topics besides the Kings to talk about on the program today because need to really flush that game from last night in game one. Here's the topic, Dennis, and we can put a pin in this and we can get back to it later, but I want to plant a seed with you. San Jose, worst team in the league. They have an opportunity to get the number one pick, generational talent allegedly coming out of the college hockey ranks and could be the pick. And it could really help set San Jose up. They already have some other young, good prospects. Of course, to build off of. That'd be another piece to the puzzle. And they could be looking for a head coach. There is a renaissance going on around the league right now where it used to be tough coaches. And then it swung to the players, and everybody had to play nice, and it was like AYSO soccer. And then now there seems to be a real appetite, you know, Tortorella and all the stuff you're seeing, and players in Buffalo, people talking about accountability. You're seeing it around the league that accountability is in. It's the new buzzword, okay? Mm-hmm. Accountability is back.
Right.
What if the San Jose Sharks brought back Todd McClellan, and you're into this whole finish the story thing with Cody? They want to try to finish the story, and they want to bookend things, and they want to bring back McClellan. It might be one way to get some fans back in the building as well, because it'll, you know, romanticize the glory days of the Sharks. I don't know where it's going, but I'm just putting that out there, Dennis, that that would be an intriguing situation to keep an eye on.
Yeah, intriguing, but that's a long climb for that team. That team is very bad.
It is.
But if you want a guy who just did that in Los Angeles and built from a team that basically, you know, really bottomed out, it's a possibility. You know, and talking to Todd, you know, on a couple of road trips, I think he's done, to be honest with you, John.
Like, I don't.
You know, he's getting, he gets one more. You don't? You think he's, really?
Nope.
I think he's done. It had to be a, I thought he'd be much better for Buffalo. I'm kind of shocked they picked Lindy Ruff. And I think
I
a lot of people
shocked as well,
him.
Because remember that they had, they had toyed with the idea. None of us believed that it was actually going to happen because it was, as far as I'm concerned, the deal was signed in L.A.
Right.
Even though it might not have had ink to paper, it was a done deal. But they at least toyed with the idea of, you know, entertained the idea of hiring McClellan out from underneath L.A. at the time when he came here. So it was at least surprising, and they were pretty quick to go back to that. But look, let's put a pin in all of that. I just wanted to float that out there to you, give you something
to
think about.
It's a great suggestion. I love it.
I'm curious if there's smoke there. That's what I'm curious about. Theoretically, I would like to believe that Todd would be more interested in chasing a cup. However, knowing that he's financially set at this point, it might be more about a situation that he enjoys. Similar to the situation with Torts. He didn't go there to win a cup in Philadelphia. He went there. He went there to be himself, right? To have the control that he needs, and in a market that would allow him to be himself, which they've done for the most part. This could be very a comforting feeling for Todd after, you know, having his teeth kicked in and being fired in Edmonton and then being fired in Los Angeles. Neither of those were, you know, that hurts anybody's ego. That hurts anybody's pride. That's not exclusive to Todd McClellan. You know, he had two runs that did not end the way he wanted them to. Could he chase a cup? Sure. It comes with more stress, probably less fun during the process. The fun only happens if it pays off in a cup, and only one team can win the cup. So, you know, when you look at things on balance, the San Jose gig might be something that is more comfortable to him. I'm not sure. I haven't spoken to him recently, so we'll see. But I thought it was the first thing that sort of popped into my mind as the rumors started floating that San Jose
revisiting,
which is really weird. Why are you doing that publicly? Why aren't just make a decision behind closed doors and then just, you know, make an announcement? Why is it? I don't know. It seems kind of weird to me that you're publicly thinking about making a change. It's not the normal course of business.
It is not. Absolutely not. And a great suggestion, actually. I mean, it spurs a conversation for sure.
Mike Greer played for Todd McClellan, too, by the way. Just don't lose sight of that. So,
for sure.
Dennis, I hope you have a fantastic time in Edmonton, my friend. I look forward to seeing you later this week.
You cut into my drinking time, John. I think Jimmy Fox is waiting for me in the lobby. So, but
go have fun.
Some things are more important, like Kings of the Podcast. So happy to talk with you and hopefully better things for a more competitive game, at least tomorrow night, and hopefully a long series. And hopefully your prediction comes right.
All right, so buy Foxy's first drink. It's on me, okay?
Got it.
All right, talk to you soon, DB. There you go, everybody. Have a good week.
There'll be better days when the sun gets into you and the shadows of your heart. There'll be better days when my love will find you, even though we're miles apart. Like an airplane, as the world fades out, and there's a new world yet to come. And all your pain will release at night into the arms of the chosen one. If you're lost, I'll find you there, with the sunlight in your hair. And the sadness washed away by the rain. Believe me. Believe me. your eyes, 'cause you're reeling. Baby, try to remember, it's just a feeling. And there'll be better waves that begin to echo through the wasteland of your mind, through the Milky Way. Oh, my love will.